You are listening to A Difference for One podcast, episode number 57.
I'm Michelle.
I'm Nicole.
I'm Charisse.
And I'm Cami.
We are the English Sisters.
We come together to share life-changing methods of improvement through a variety of topics.
We hope that above all, these discussions will help you feel that Jesus Christ is making a difference for you, the one. And we also hope that our podcast will inspire you to find simple ways that you can make a difference for one.
Hello, everyone. This is Charisse, and I have a special guest with me. And when I say special, I mean this person is part of my heart. She's not just in my heart. She is part of my heart. I have known her since July of 2012. That's when we met. And when we met, it just felt like we were long lost sisters. We were immediate family, immediate best friends. I want to introduce you guys today to Josie Suter.
Hello, everyone.
So I met Josie when she was actually one of my husband's students. He teaches high school, and we were on an FFA officer retreat trip, and she was one of the officers, and I got to know all of those students really well. We had so much fun for a few days, boating and singing and just having a great time. And ever since then, it has been such a pleasure to know Josie, to be her friend, to be able to turn to her when I'm having a bad day or vice versa, when she's just not feeling it and she needs to have somebody to talk to. We've just been besties ever since, and I'm so grateful. A little bit more about Josie. Besides the fact that I love her and I named one of my children after her, she is a registered nurse at Intermountain Hospital in Burley, Idaho, and she is my go-to when I have medical questions or maybe awkward questions. And I think it's really important for anybody listening to this to be able to find somebody that knows the answers to your questions and is able to answer them in a kind way and doesn't feel awkward, because the more you learn, the more you're aware of, I think. I'm loving being pregnant right now, and I'm loving noticing changes in my body as my hips move out or, you know, whatever, feeling the baby move. It's fun. It's not scary. And I love all of the knowledge that I have acquired in order to enjoy this experience. So today I brought Josie on to talk with me about being a caregiver. Josie is a nurse. And I have been a caregiver for my husband, who has had cancer twice and has gone through 5 years plus of treatment because he's still dealing with side effects from having had cancer, even though he's in remission. Like, he just had a surgery a few days before Halloween because he has a cyst in his spine that they want to get rid of. It hasn't gone away, and I'm still a caregiver, and I'm also a mother. So I'm needing to take care of my husband, but also take care of my kids. And when my kids were teeny tiny and my husband got diagnosed with cancer again, I went into this dark place in my mind and I realized that I was in what Josie and I like to call caregiver burnout. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about how to prevent caregiver burnout, how to recover from it if you're in a position of being burned out from caring for others, and maybe ways to find resources or tips and tricks that have helped us in our personal experiences, because we have a lot of them and we have joked about half of them because people think it's morbid to talk and joke about something that's so serious and so scary. But Carl and I learned on early that if you don't joke about it, you're going to be crying about it. And what's better, to go through life always miserable or most of the time happy? And I've learned that a lot of the nurses I've met through my journey, they are the most real people. You can say anything you want to them and they'll turn it into a joke. And they're just so fun to be around, just like Josie.
So I just wanted to give you guys a little bit more of my personal background in the healthcare field, as well as some of my personal experiences like Charisse has shared. So before I became a nurse, so my first job I ever had in the healthcare field was working as an NA, so a nurse's assistant, which is different from a CNA, because after you become a CNA, you have a certificate saying that you took a course to be a certified nurse's assistant. Before I got my CNA, I was 18 living in Boise, and I worked for the Veterans Hospital doing home care for one person. And then after that, I moved to Twin and got my CNA and did home health for 3 years before I started my journey in hospice, which is where I think I experienced the majority of my caregiver burnout, because I was doing a very hard job that kind of takes a lot of heart. And I was in nursing school and I was planning my wedding, and it was exhausting.
So then we're just going to ask Josie a few questions to narrow down specifically the most important things that we want to talk about on this episode, because she's had a lot of experiences, and I'm sure we could talk forever about the ups and downs of being a nurse's assistant, being a certified nurse's assistant, working in hospice, and then nursing school, and then being a nurse. Like, there's a lot. When you were a nurse's assistant, what was going on either externally or like in your mind to get you to realize that you were in caregiver burnout? What were the signs?
For that particular job, it was my first real exposure. I'd helped take care of family members, but I was never the head honcho per se of that whole operation. And with this particular patient, he was very mean in the beginning, and I am very sensitive. I take basically everything anyone ever says to me to heart. And every day when I would leave work, I would call my mom just bawling, because he was so difficult and so hard to take care of. And he was so mean and he was so crude. And I was not knowing how to handle that. And my mom, bless her heart, she told me to give it 1 month. And if at the end of 31 days, I decided I could not handle it anymore, then I could quit. And in that experience, I finally had a breakthrough and was very honest and said to this patient, "You are becoming so difficult. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help you. I want to. My heart is in it." And I think that this happens sometimes, especially when people are taking care of family members, because there is like such a close relation that sometimes that honesty feels brutal. But where this was a stranger to me prior to this job, and it was a job, and I don't believe in driving yourself into the dirt for a job. Your family is a different story. But through that honesty of me being like, "Hey, I'm here and I want to help you. I want to see you succeed and to do better." I think that we had a really groundbreaking moment, because I got to the point where when I would pull up to this patient's house, I was dreading going inside. I was dreading waking him up. I was dreading the cares that I knew I needed to do, because it was miserable. But that honesty really helped, even though I didn't at the time know how to appropriately communicate the distress that I was having as well as what my patient was having. Later on, after I got my CNA and got a little bit of an education behind it, I learned how to utilize more therapeutic communication to be able to have more honest conversations, honest in a more polite manner, to have these conversations and to keep professionalism instead of breaking down crying in front of other humans, if that makes any sense.
Yes, that does make sense. I love that you had your education and you learned how to speak with patients through what you said, therapeutic communication. And that's really cool. I now like want to take a whole course on that. That sounds fun. Looking back, if you could do that over again, that time with that patient, with the mindset that you have now, what would you have done differently to prevent getting into that burnout state?
So I would have loved to have been able to recognize the signs and symptoms that we were both experiencing before having an explosive moment and having it turn into a bawling / screaming session, because that's what it did come down to. But neither of us knew how to appropriately communicate with one another. I think like the therapeutic communication I was talking about, it sounds cheesy, but you would be shocked at how effective it is. Instead of me screaming, "I don't know how to help you, but I want to help you," I could have come at it as, I'm hearing that you are having a hard time, and I would like you to help me understand. Help me understand what you're feeling so that I can figure out how to respond to you differently, how to care for you differently, how to take care of what you need me to without taking things away from you. Because a big part of caregiving is being able to give back in every instance. Because if you're having to take care of someone, it's because they're unable to take care of themselves. And with adults especially, you have to think about how to leave people with their dignity intact and not to take away from what they're doing. It might take someone 20 minutes to put on a sock, but how amazing that they can do that by themselves. And to really celebrate the moments of them being able to do things that they either previously couldn't do because they're weak or because whatever, and like celebrating their progress, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at, rather than just, let me do it for you, I can do it quicker. You have to be able to share in small celebrations with people. You have to be able to see, you know, hey, you're in distress and I really am trying to reach you. Can you help me understand how you need to be helped? Because this goes back to even basic things like everybody's love language is different. Like my husband, for example, he is a big person on acts of service. I am not. I am more of like a physical touch, spend time with me, pay attention to me. I need the verbal affirmations. Tell me that you love me, because you can show me that you love me. And I appreciate that also. He's very much big on acts of service. I notice that when he comes home and the house is clean, he's happier versus when he comes home and my house is a disaster. And I'm like, but I love you. It doesn't go quite as far. You have to ask people how they would like to be helped, to be proficient in helping.
As you were talking, it was reminding me of parenting my kids when they were toddlers. Now they're in school. But when you were talking about sitting there and letting them figure out how to put on a sock for 20 minutes. And as a parent, that would take so much patience. But really, when you're giving them the opportunity to learn and have an experience, instead of taking away privileges or taking away their dignity and belittling them because you're the better of the two, that you could do it faster, that you're more capable. How is a kid going to learn if you're doing everything for them? Or how is a patient going to progress and heal if they are being coddled and not seen as somebody who is more independent?
Well, try it with anyone that you can find, you know, something that you would typically take care of, versus letting someone who might not be as proficient or as fast or whatever as you doing it, and then really take a moment to celebrate with them. And you will both experience that immediate gratification and what a difference that makes. It's so beneficial and it builds so much trust.
We'll be back after this quick break with a message from our sponsors.
Yeah, I love where this is going. So let's talk about what it feels like to be in caregiver burnout when you were a CNA and going through nursing school at the same time. What did your caregiver burnout look like at that time?
So when I first started hospice, I thought that I had found like the holy grail of my passion. It is such a beautiful thing to experience. But what I realized was I was so tired all the time and I felt like I never had a moment to myself. And I am a very patient person naturally, but I was losing that patience. And I was so short-tempered with my husband, with my teachers, with my classmates, and most of all, with my patients. When I was doing hospice, I was like the queen of dementia land because they loved me, because I was so patient and I could talk to them. And I was very good at allowing them the time that they needed to do simple tasks. And we would have that beautiful moment of instant gratification and celebration. And I loved it. And then all of a sudden, I was so short-tempered. And it was, if you could just move faster, if you could just get this done, then I could go and I can move on to my next patient. You know, I only have 4 hours and I need to see five of you. So if you could just hurry up. And I noticed that I had this ugly, ugly feeling inside me. And I was dreading going to work. I was dreading going to see some of my favorite people, I mean, the love that I had for these patients was just over the moon. And I was getting so irritated and so short, and I just didn't even want to see them. And I really, truly felt like I wasn't doing the job that I knew that I could do, the job that I had been doing, because I couldn't dedicate any more of myself because I felt like I was losing my mind. I felt so empty and so angry about it that it was keeping me up at night. And I was thinking, tomorrow, the next time I feel like I'm going to be short-tempered with someone, I'm going to take a deep breath and I'm going to really think through a response before it comes flying out of my mouth and hurting someone's feelings that I'm attacking for no fault of their own, because I'm just plain burnt out.
And how did it feel to have all of that with nursing school on top of that?
Oh my gosh. You know, I think often, like, if you're ever to be wrapped in barbed wire and then shoved down the biggest hill you've ever seen in your life, that's about how glorious it felt. Honestly, like, things are stabbing, things are pulling. I have a concussion and two broken legs, and I just want to lay here and die because good grief, Charlie Brown. Honestly, you're welcome for the visual. Right.
That was excellent. I thoroughly enjoyed that. How did you survive? I mean, you had to go through school. You had to get up every day. You had to keep going. And you had your moments of mental and emotional and physical exhaustion. But how did you get back to the present moment and focus on the next day? Like, how did you do it?
So I think something that I found very, very helpful is when I was experiencing those moments of just being so frustrated, to really stop. And first of all, I had a lot of help. I had a ton of help. I worked for a fabulous company. And when I expressed my concerns, I don't feel like I'm doing a good job, and it's killing me. It's destroying me because I'm either angry or I'm feeling so much guilt. I feel like I am drowning and I am tethered to the bottom of the ocean and there's no coming back. It's either guilt or anger, and both of those things are so heavy. So I was able to get some help and kind of cut back on what I was doing. I was able, and amazing professors, and I was able to talk to them and be like, how did you fight through this when you experienced it? And some of the best advice I ever got was, when you feel that building inside of you, that anger, that just like lack of patience and grossness, take a step back and look at the person that you are caring for. Look at them, really look at them, and remind yourself, this human being in front of me, this is someone's whole entire world. This human that I have been asked to do cares for, someone else put their whole universe, their favorite person, into my hands. How can I make this situation better? And, you know, some days that nice, warm, fuzzy feeling lasted for the rest of the day. Sometimes it lasted for 5 minutes and I had to do it several times. I'm not going to lie to you. But really just to remind yourself what you're doing, why you're doing it. You know, I'm not doing this for a paycheck. I've never done it for a paycheck. I do it because I truly have so much love in my heart. But it is really important to be able to identify your boundaries and to make sure that you're setting time aside for yourself, be that reading your favorite book. For me, like watching Friends on repeat, probably until I die, taking a bubble bath, spending time with your spouse or your kids, but to be able to schedule time where you can fill up your cup so that you can avoid having these moments of just being so done with everything that you feel like you're wrapped in barbed wire and you're being pushed down a hill.
I love that you mentioned the cup, because that's basically what we are. We are a vessel. We are a cup. We are a container, if you will. And when we are full, we are able to give so much, and we have the energy mentally and physically to be able to be patient, to care, to love, to serve. But when we have done so much and just emptied our cup without it ever getting filled back up, then we are doing a disservice to those that we are trying to care for, but really we're making it worse. and we're not improving the situation no matter how hard we try. I realized when my kids were little and my husband was building our house and he was going through treatments and he was working as a teacher, I had to do everything at home by myself. When I woke up, I made my husband breakfast and he hopped in the shower and I got my kids some food and I made sure that he was all set and ready to go to work. And then I didn't see him after work because he'd go straight from work to building out the house site. And so I was with the kids all day long. No adult conversation. One was a three-year-old and the other was a one-year-old. And they were the only ones I got to talk to the whole day. And that's who I played with. That's who I cared for. And when it was time to see a normal adult again, I was already asleep. I was already in bed. I was already done for the day. And so was my husband. And he was exhausted and I was exhausted. And we did this every single day. And it was wearing me out. And it was wearing him out. But we were pushing through. And he would go to his periodic chemo treatments. And I would either go to his treatments with him to help him, or I would just have to have somebody else go with him or him go by himself, depending on the situation and the circumstance. And when I took the kids with me, it was a nightmare because they were little scientists trying to discover every single thing in this clinic. And all these people are dealing with their personal issues with cancer and whatever else they had going on. And they didn't have the mental capacity to deal with little kids screaming and running. And so I had to contain them, you know, and try to like distract them. And oh, here's a cookie and here's a snack and here's a toy and here's this. And oh, like, I had to change like 500 diapers and on and on and on and on. And so then I would find a babysitter. And then when I finally would do something for myself, like get a babysitter and go to Carl's treatment with him, I had overflowing amounts of guilt. You should be with your kids. You should do this. You should do that. Why are you doing this? Carl doesn't even need you anyway. All of these thoughts would just run through my mind and pull me down in the moment when I am finally doing some self-care and doing something for me, getting that moment of peace. And it felt like it was never going to end. What did I do to fill up my cup? I did a lot of things. Like Josie said, she had a lot of help, a lot of friends, a lot of love. Her dog, she did not mention her dog, but her dog was super helpful. I know Archie was there for you at many times. I had friends to turn to. I had family to call on the phone. I crocheted a lot to try to keep my fingers busy when my mind was wanting to go in negative places. It was a time for my mind to decompress and I would crochet something. I worked on a massive blanket for our new house. It felt like something productive. Something beautiful to create for our new house, even though I was creating it in a time when I didn't feel mentally present. And I think that's a key thing, to be mentally present. What can I do to bring joy back into my home or back into my brain in this moment? So I pull out some bubbles and I turn on Disney music and I dance around the kitchen with my kids. And then I lay on the floor and I let them crawl all over me and I let their giggles overflow the negative thoughts in my mind. And this was just one of the days. On that note, what are some resources? What are some things that people can do if they feel like they're in caregiver burnout? And I say caregiver, but I mean nurses, doctors, parents, teachers. If you do a service for somebody, you are a caregiver. And so this is for you. What can people do when they're in this state? What are some resources? What are some tips and tricks?
So, you know, if you're at home and you're taking care of a family member, or like you said, like getting a babysitter, the first thing that I want all of you truly, if you remember nothing else from this podcast, you have to get rid of that guilt that I should be doing more. I should be doing it myself. I should be taking care of everything, because I'm sorry to tell you, but you can't. You can't. It's not realistic. And that is what's going to lead you to burnout. People like Charisse and I, we are so used to being like the OG mother hen. I must provide for everyone. And it's just not how life works. Like she said, you know, I have my dog and bless his little heart. The days when I would come home and truly feel like I had done nothing productive, nothing right. Everyone hates me because I did a crappy job. That little sucker would look at me with his cute little brown eyes. And he would need me in such a simple and basic way, like to fill his food bowl, to hold him. Dumb things. But it was so nice because I could be like, you know what? I did do something today. I loved you. If nothing else, I loved you. So you've got to scratch the standards there. You've got to get rid of that guilt, because it is not that it's not important to take care of your spouse, your kids, whoever you're caring for, but that guilt will eat you alive. It will. And it's doing nobody any services, and it's taking you 10 steps backwards. And that's where you're going to feel like you're drowning. But resources that you can do, you can ask a family member, hey, you know, I need a night away from grandma because I'm worried one of us isn't going to be alive in the morning. And I'm fearful of that, you know, but it's real. Like,
yeah,
I need to have, you know, 12 uninterrupted hours where I'm not changing a diaper or feeding someone or checking to make sure that they're breathing every 5 minutes, because I am exhausted. And if you go home and nothing else you do, like you just sit down and watch a movie and sleep without the nagging stress that, you know, if I'm not there, the world is going to end. No, Chicken Little, the sky will not fall. It won't. And if it does, it is still not your fault. I cannot say that enough times. It is not your fault. You are only human and you are doing the best you can.
You are doing everything in your power to do the best you can. And you are the perfect person for those people, whether you're the perfect parent for those kids or the perfect teacher for those kids or the perfect nurse for those patients. In that moment, they are your charge and you are the right person for that moment. One thing that's really helped me is to come back to the present moment. And I've done a lot of things to try to get me to that point. I will go out and I'll put my feet in the grass. I will go sit in a bathtub and I will put some essential oils and some Epsom salt and I will detox from my day. And mentally, I feel so much better once I've taken a bath because I'm able to turn on some meditation music and just focus on the water and how it feels and not on anything else going on around me. And it's okay to enjoy the present moment. If you don't want to do any of those things that we've mentioned, the number one best thing to get you back to the present moment, instead of freaking out about what you're about to do or what you did yesterday, to get you out of that, I want you to breathe and listen to what your breathing sounds like. It is the coolest thing. There are times when I'm like about to fall asleep and I go back to my breathing and I'm like, and I listen to it. And what it sounds like, and boom, I'm able to like wake up for a little bit longer to keep my kids alive or whatever, or to the task that I'm doing at hand. It is the best thing. Like when I do yoga, yoga is not for the stretches as much as it is for the breathing. Okay. What else do you got for them, Josie?
Another technique that I have learned along my journey, it's called grounding. This can be done in a lot of different forms. Like you talked about putting your feet on the grass and like really paying attention to the sensation. One in particular method I have learned is the five senses you go through. Just sit, close your eyes, and focus. Five things you can smell, five things you can taste, five things you can see, five things you can hear, and five things that you can picture yourself doing that bring you peace. Even if you can't get away to do it in the moment, spending that much time to think about those things will give you enough time to kind of disconnect from your environment for a second and to give yourself a little bit of a break to be able to refocus and to come back. As far as like hospital settings, utilize your friends, utilize your help around you. Really, the biggest thing about caregiver burnout, regardless of the circumstances, knowing how to ask for help and just knowing your care team, who is around you that can be beneficial to you? Who can you reach out to? Who can you grab? Hey, this patient in room 1146, whatever it is, they are making me nuts. I can't go back in that room. I need like 5 minutes to go eat a granola bar and sit by myself. Can you take them this water? Can you take them this Tylenol? Can you take them a warm blanket? Like, I just need a second away from them because they've been on the call light all day. Or, you know, my mom recently lived with us. She's also in remission from cancer. And bless her little soul, she's got to be the easiest person to get along with. But after working 3 12-hour shifts at the hospital, with my 40-minute drive back and forth and everything else, we had to have a very honest conversation of, first thing in the morning, I need like a second. I need a second to evaluate what my day looks like, the things I'm going to achieve and what I'm going to do. I need a second to pray. I need a second to focus. I love you. Get away from me. Because bless her heart, when she wakes up, she's like, hi, good morning. You want some coffee? I made some coffee for you. Do you want to talk? I had a dream last night. You want to hear about it? I'm like, no, politely, I don't. When I first get to work, I get report and then I have to sit at my computer and I look through my patients and I'm making a plan and I do it at the computer the furthest away from all the humans because I don't want anyone to talk to me. I am still waking up. I'm still processing and I need a second to, for lack of a better phrase, get my poop in a group because it's not, and I need it to be there so I can be productive and achieve the things that I need to set out to achieve that day.
Yeah, you just need a minute to wake up. I get it.
Knowing the people that you have around you to ask for help and to be able to lean on, even if you don't need help with anything physical. My husband has been the biggest blessing I could have ever imagined in my life because he does not like to hear about all of my medical stuff. But he also knows when I just need a minute to blurt it out at him and be like, today was insane. Like, I broke someone's ribs doing CPR and I'm not okay. So I'm going to sit here and just word vomit at you for a good 30 minutes. And he looks at me and smiles and nods. But after that, he's so loving. His arms are always open to me and he's there for me. Just to have a minute to be like, today was really scary and I don't know what happened, but you know, XYZ, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And not even that it's anything he says, it's anything he does. It's just that I know I have that human that I can connect with always. You call your mom or your sister or your whoever out in the universe, your best friend. You have someone that you can unload this stuff onto that they're not going to carry. That's another thing. Unload on someone that is not going to hold it in. Charisse and I had this problem for a long time. We would dump all this stuff on each other, but it still felt like, I think I'm carrying your garbage because I love you so much that yes. It is stuck to me like tar. And I want it off also.
Seriously, I would be laying there on my pillow and then all of a sudden, involuntarily, tears are coming out of my eyes. I feel fine, but there's just tears coming out of my eyes. And so I'm texting her and I'm like, hey, how are you doing? Are you okay? And she's like, no, I'm not okay. How did you know? And I'm like, ooh, I'm crying, but it's not my crying. It's your crying. I'm crying for you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And then she's able to be like, oh my gosh, somebody's here for me. Somebody hears me. Somebody cares. I can quickly unload. And it's not that we overwhelm each other. It's just that we are a safe place to just do a like 10-second word vomit and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I understand. I get you. And then we, through conversation, we know how to help each other get out of that place and move forward. And most of the time, all we need is somebody to just get us. Like, you get me. Okay, now I can move on. Like, I'm not a crazy person. We need validation. As you were talking, Josie, I remembered one of our recent conversations where I was venting to you about what was going on. And I was like, da, 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 da. And then Josie's response had nothing to do with what I just complained about. And she nailed me on actually what was the problem. I was complaining about my husband and something that he gave me. And I'm like, I never get what I want. And he's so mean and he won't talk to me. And I need you to talk to him because he won't talk to me. And oh, I was mad. I was sad. I was on the floor of my bathroom for a good hour, just having the worst day of my life. And she responded and she said, you had another miscarriage, didn't you, honey? I was like, yeah. And then we were able to go through that and get me to, I'm not crying. You're crying.
Shut up.
But it was necessary to do the venting because she wouldn't have been able to see the truth had I not done that. So it is another resource, another thing to do when you're in caregiver burnout is find somebody you can vent to, somebody that will validate you. Then sometimes there are really cool people in your life that have seen you for you, and they actually can read through the lines. Like when I was complaining to my husband about this thing, he's like, I don't know how to deal with this. It's like, you've handed me broken glass and I'm just, and I hand the broken glass to Josie and she's like, this isn't actually glass. This is sand and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like just so random. And, you know what I mean? She was able to see right through me and get to the root of the problem and help me solve that, because what I was complaining about wasn't the actual problem. And she got me off the floor that day.
It is important also to have a team. And I use the word team very often. You know, I have several teams. Yeah. Me and Charisse are on a team. We've always been on a team, even before I think we knew each other. On some spiritual level, we were on a team.
But we don't always turn to each other.
Correct. It's about knowing who you need to talk to per what you need. And you don't always know right away. Sometimes it's a little trial and error. Like Charisse was saying, she was telling her husband all of these random things that were so upsetting to her when that wasn't the bigger issue. And to be able to talk about it openly with someone, sometimes even you yourself are able to pick through and, you know, identify, this is actually my problem. Mm-hmm. All these other things were the straw that broke the camel's back. It's not the root of the issue. Mm-hmm. They're bothersome and they need addressed also, but there is this big glaring giant elephant in the room that I don't want to talk about, but maybe someone else can help you identify that and to address it so that it can be put to rest.
It's super important once you can identify it to not run away from it and to not be intimidated by it, that it's going to be painful to talk about or to process through. But there is light at the end of that tunnel. In my experience with people I know, or even my own personal experience, when there are mental health issues, it's typically pointed to some root problems that people are avoiding or that I am avoiding and I don't want to face. And so we do things like we've talked about in a past episode called hedging. You can go back and listen to our episode on hedging. There are things that people do to avoid facing those root problems because we're just trying to survive. We're just trying to cope. We're just trying to get through the next 5 minutes. But when you can get to that safe space and that safe person to work with to get through the root issue and not just get to it, but to get through it, it's magic. Oh my gosh, you guys, it's so healing and so therapeutic and so wonderful.
Funny that you said therapeutic. Another thing I want to bring up, I am a firm believer, no matter how healthy you believe you are, go see a therapist. Go see a therapist. They have gone through years of schooling and they are there for you. The first time I ever went and saw a therapist, I was completely under the impression, I did it for a class. And I thought, there is no way anywhere in the universe that I need to see a therapist. I am fine. And as soon as the door shut behind me and that this human was looking at me like, okay, are you going to talk? I absolutely lost my marbles. And I don't think I did anything but cry. And this sweet man said, so I'm going to see you 2 times a week because I am worried about you. And I was like, but I'm fine. I'm totally fine. He's like, yeah, you look fine. You have snot down to your chin. That's disgusting. Here's a tissue. So when we were talking about fill your cup, an important visual that I want you to have is don't ever picture your cup is stable. It does not move. It sits upright. Do not tilt your cup. Your cup needs to overfill into the cup below it. Don't tip your cup. That's how people get empty cups. That's where caregiver burnout comes from. Find things that fill your cup and don't allow yourself to just keep giving when you're not getting any reciprocation from anywhere, even if it comes from yourself. Like, I can't say that every day I walk into a patient's room, they're actually doing anything to fill up my cup. I have some difficult people who really don't always love me being in there. That's just how life works, but I'm still in there and I'm still going to love them because it's what I am here to do. I will find a way to love every human I come across, no matter how disturbing or repulsive things that they have done or try to do or do whatever it might be to me personally, there's still a soul there. And I see you. I see you and I love you. However it has to happen. That is one of my favorite sayings, by the way, to tell someone that you see them. For me, that does not mean like, yeah, you're looking at me. Absolutely. Great. Fine. Dandy. When I tell someone I see you, I'm seeing your beautifulness, your sparkle, your glitter, you're happy, but I'm also seeing you're messed up, you're hurting, you're broken, and I still love you. I think it's really important sometimes for people to hear that and to hear it from someone that is genuine and you can put intent behind it, because I think that's part of a lot of people's problems, especially with caregiver burnout. I know when I feel like I am not being seen for what I'm doing or being appreciated at all in any shape or form. That was part of my problem when I was working in hospice, because as I said, I am the dementia queen. Those people cannot respond in a meaningful way all the time because they don't know that I've been seeing them for 2 years. They don't know that I know that they grew up in this town or that their husband's name was this or their kids are da 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 da. They don't know that I know these things. To them, I am a stranger. So they can't always reciprocate that kind of love back to me that we all need. We need that verification and validation and appreciation given back to us. So sometimes to be able to find a way to reach out and to make it a point to show them, to tell them, to be there for that person, because it doesn't always come from who you believe it should come from, not who it's supposed to come from, because Charisse is the queen of validating me in my madness. I grew up in an environment where I wasn't always sure that I was loved or was appreciated for a time being. That was a really big struggle through very crucial developmental years of my life. And it honestly took a long time for me to understand that I don't have to tilt my cup. I don't have to tilt it. I shouldn't tilt it. I shouldn't give and give and give and give and give and run myself dry, because there is another way that is so glaringly simple. It's almost ridiculous to just leave your cup steady and find ways to fill it, because you can do it all by yourself. You can. It is helpful and it is awesome to have people that you can talk to help rebuild that and to keep filling your cup. But like Charisse was saying, you know, when she was having really dark times and she was really struggling, to lay on her floor and just listen to her children giggle like it's not the most purest sound in the entire universe, you know, a child's laughter, get out of here. I want that to be my ringtone. But to have something like that to help to overflow your cups so that you can fill other people's cups, because it's not like you get allotted 75 ounces a day, so use it wisely. You know, it comes from anything that you can find joy in, you can find love in, you can find happiness in. You just have to be able to manifest these things and to find them and to know how you can get that instant gratification from things.
I just want to recap a couple of things because I took notes as we were talking so that people can write this down. But some of my favorite things that we've mentioned so far as like resources or tips and tricks when you're a caregiver and you're getting burnout, to stay in the present moment or try to come back to the present moment instead of being in this reactive mode to all these things that are happening to you. Realize that this is bigger than just you. So let's come back to right now, what's going on, and realize that hurrying people up might actually make it slower. If you've ever tried to hurry up a toddler and they just fight back, guys, and somebody who's elderly, they're a toddler. They're just heavier.
Amen, sister.
You can't carry them out the door very easily. Another thing I loved is that when we are giving time for ourselves and doing something that gives us peace to get rid of the guilt, you need to do stuff for yourself. Yesterday, I was telling my husband, I've been looking back in all these years of helping you and supporting you. And I was just thinking, was it enough? Like, have I done enough? And he's like, are you kidding me? Seriously? You've done enough and more. Stop it. I'm like, okay.
You sweet baby.
Okay. We have our moments. I love that you said, take a step back and really look at the person you're caring for. This is their whole world right now. And that made me think of like my little babies. I am their whole world and they're depending on me. And your residents, your patients, they are your little babies. You are their world and they're depending on you.
And they're someone else's favorite person. How would you feel if it was someone was getting so crotchety with your favorite person? That makes me borderline murderous. You're taking care of someone's everything. So take care of them as if they were your everything.
Yeah. Because there's another family member trusting their loved one in your care. And they expect the best. As they should.
As they should.
Okay. I loved when you mentioned grounding and going back to your five senses. What do I see? What do I hear? What do I smell? What do I taste? What can I touch? Everybody needs a therapist. Loved that one. The phrases that are important. I see you. I hear you. Oh, you get right to the soul of somebody and realizing that you love all of them. And the ultimate, find the joy, find the love, find the happiness because it's there. Create it. If you can't find it, it's there. It's totally possible. When you're at your lowest of lows, count your blessings. Okay. So I want to end our wonderful conversation with a spiritual thought, and you can find it in the New Testament in Matthew chapter 22, verse 39. And this is when Jesus is talking with one of the Sadducees. He's a lawyer, basically. And he says, "What is the great commandment, Master?" And Jesus said unto him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it." This is the important one, verse 39. "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." Now, as caregivers, we know how to love people. We do it all the time. But are we caring for ourselves? Are we caring for people in the way that we care for ourselves? Or vice versa? Are we caring for ourselves in the way that we care for people? It's got to be the same. We've got to do good to ourselves if we're going to be able to do good for others. And we've got to be able to do good for others if we're going to be able to do good for ourselves.
You deserve the same amount of respect and love as the people that you care so, so heavily for, because without it, you will experience caregiver burnout. You will meet that grossness of anxiety and anger and lack of patience and guilt. You will be doing a disservice to yourself and everyone around you. You have got to love yourself as you love others.
Because you're worth it.
You are.
I am worthy because I am alive. That's one of my affirmations that I say every morning, written on my wall, because I need to remember it. I need to remember that I'm just as important as those that I love.
And saying the things out loud is like, it's like working a muscle, you know, it just gets stronger over time. You start to believe it more. You say it with more confidence. I used to get so immediately angry when Charisse would say, "Okay, say out loud, I love myself." And I would say it like that because I'm a jerk. But over time, I was able to look myself in the mirror and really say, "I love myself. I'm a good person. I do hard things and I do them well." It's like working a muscle.
Well, thank you, Josie, for joining me, for having this conversation with me, but in front of others, because this is definitely something that we talk about all the time. And I hope that the listeners will forgive our imperfections and remember all the things that are important and pertinent to them, and that they will have been able to apply something that we said to make their life just a little bit easier. Okay, guys, we will talk to you next time.
If you like this podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. If it resonates with you, the greatest compliment you could give is to share it with a friend who might benefit from it as well. Check out A Difference for One on Instagram for additional content. And if you have any questions, comments, a topic you'd like to hear about, or if you'd be interested in a free mini coaching session, send an email to adifferenceforone@gmail.com.